it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, we'll be covering Cloak of Darkness. Ahsoka and Jedi Master Luminara escort captured Knute Gunray to trial, unaware that Count Dooku has dispatched a deadly assassin. There will be ladies rocking this episode, like it was Beyonce, Nicki Minaj, and Taylor Swift having a throwdown, because who ruled the world? Girls! Hi, Chris.
Hi. The girls do just about pretty much rule this episode. That's for sure.
We'll bring the boys out. Girl generation, let me feel the beat. Sorry, I had to sing some K-pop.
Some of the clones do okay as far as representing our gender, but they still get knocked out. And, yeah.
Girls generation. get some K-pop, get some girl generation up in here. I have that song.
Yeah. It was funny, we were talking, we were at work, and he's just out of high school, and he's this big, hulking, red-haired Sasquatch of a kid. He's a football player, but he's going to be an engineer, so he's a smart kid, but he was like, blah, 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 he's singing along to the song, he goes, what do you think about Taylor Swift there, Chris? And I said, I honestly can't tell you. I guess I'm supposed to not like her, but I couldn't tell you because I wouldn't recognize one of her songs. And he's like, well, we're listening to her right now. And it was a song that I'd heard, you know, a million times on the radio. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Why was you supposed to not like Taylor Swift?
Because she's a teen pop starry type person.
Why does that matter? I know a lot of guys who love her and a lot of girls who hate her.
Yeah, I was, and vice versa. I mean, judging by the song I was hearing, it was just, to me, generic pop song, which are like pass or fail usually with me. You know, I'm not going to hear any good like lyrics or, you know, or great lyrics or deep lyrics or anything. But it all depends on it doesn't even depend on its power to stay in my head, because the worst song in the world can stay in my head. But if it can stay in my head, or if when it comes on, it gives you that instant like, oh, hey. Yeah, and it's stupid songs. That stupid, what the hell is that song? Blurred Lines.
Yo, God, I hate that.
Every time I hear that come on, I'm like, hey, here it goes. I like this song. The song that everybody loved and then hated, the happy song, I still like that. I hear that come on the air and I'm just like, hey, this is a good song.
Dance along if you I love Uptown Funk.
But you know,
Uptown Funk is the best.
It's just
it's okay, Chris, just shake it off.
It usually doesn't follow along artist lines. If I hear one artist and I like one of their songs, it doesn't like modern pop songs, it doesn't mean necessarily probably that I'll like their next song that comes out. But
I will say I can't stand the song Bad Blood. I don't know why everybody was just like, this is the best song ever, because it's an absolutely terrible song. I love Shake It Off though. Taylor girl, I can listen to that song all day long, girl.
I heard some Justin Bieber song where he was telling off a girl that I've heard like 20 or 30 times, you know, working, and had no idea it was Justin Bieber till someone said, I hate Justin Bieber. And I'm like, oh, this is a Justin Bieber song.
Bieber is one of those artists that, you know, I listen to a lot of pop as well as a bajillion genres. I'm very genre with everything. But like, I just have never heard a Justin Bieber song I've ever liked. But I can see why people like him. So, and I never met the dude, but he's like my favorite modern day Greek tragedy waiting to happen.
Oh, jeez.
No, his entire life is like the exact model of a Greek tragedy. You have this young hero, they get risen in star power, and they get all these glories and all these rewards, and they're pretty much like any war hero in a Greek tragedy. And so they're on cloud nine. It was the moment where he had his bodyguards carrying him on the Great Wall of China. Like, that's his pinnacle, and now I'm just waiting for his tragic demise.
Oh, yeah, and he started at the bottom as, like, a YouTube, humble, like, kid on YouTube. You know?
Yeah!
So, like, he's just some humble kid in Canada.
Alright,
I hate to say this, but we're spiraling into deeper before we even started the show, and it's supposed to be a girl power show. Should at least be talking about the Spice Girls or something.
I love the Spice Girls. I will bring it back. Because I will say, like, me and my buddy Angel do Star Wars role plays, and whenever I do a battle, I listen to Nicki Minaj's Hey Mama, and it's not for the actual lyrics, it's the beat and the energy of the song, and it just reminds me of, like, a lot of, like, Star Wars kind of energy stuff.
Have I told you 50 or 60 times already that I actually met the Spice Girls?
Yeah, I know, I'm jealous.
Sporty Spice boob touched my shoulder.
Oh, that's okay. Boba Fett hit on me.
I still haven't washed it.
You haven't washed your shoulder? You nasty.
Is
that what I smell?
I just have
over
a nasty, nasty shoulder, that's all.
You nasty. All right, so Cloak of Darkness, now that we've talked about pop music. Cloak of Darkness is the 9th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on December 5th, 2008. We're almost out of 2008. It was written by Paul Dini. Sorry if I mispronounced your name. And it was directed by the god among men, Dave Filoni.
Well, here's where your girl power comes from. Paul Dini he's a comic writer, mostly, and he writes a lot of, like, girl-centric stories, too. Or with girls as strong characters, I've been led to believe.
Who are the brothers who, like, did that comedy show and then they went on to direct Winter Soldier?
Oh, I can't remember their name.
But he's like them. I know it's not the Coen brothers. I know.
No,
that's
it's not the Coen brothers.
But I really want to see Hail Caesar really bad. I'm sorry, Star Wars. It's kind of bringing it back because Scarlett Johansson's in that movie and she's a strong female character,
okay,
like Ventress and Luminara and Ahsoka.
Sure.
All right, so as with every episode of Clone Wars, we give you the moral of the episode and terrible Yoda voices in bed.
Heroes are made by the times in bed.
Yeah, they are.
It's the second episode with bed heroes in it.
A lot of bed heroes is kind of mini arc.
Better than bed bugs.
This is a mini arc. I wonder if the next one is going to have bed heroes too.
I hope so.
We'll have to see. All right, I really love this episode. I'm actually very excited to talk about it. This is one of my favorite season one episodes. So, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So, following the events of the previous episode, Jedi Master Luminara is joined by Ahsoka Tano and escorting Newt Gunray to trial for his war crimes. They call ahead to the Republic cruiser Tranquility, introducing the human Captain Argaius. I'm saying human to distinguish him from the clone captains on the ship. Gunray tries to bargain with clone commander Gree to no avail. They turn the criminal over to Argaius and his men. Ahsoka is confused why there's so much security for someone like Gunray. Luminara warns her not to be so overconfident, as Gunray is more powerful than he looks. Right on cue, enter Count Dooku, getting a holoskype from Darth Sidious. Dooku has already sent Asajj Ventress to either rescue Gunray or kill him, but Sidious has doubts since she has had a number of failures recently. Ventress is confident in her skills to complete this mission. Luminara and Ahsoka work on interrogating Gunray. Losing her patience, Ahsoka threatens him with her lightsaber. She's quickly chastised by Luminara. Before Gunray can negotiate with the women, their Tranquility falls under attack. Dun, 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 dun. I have so many. So first, I just want to say, hey, Buffy fans. Argaius is voiced by James Marsters. Chris?
I'm sorry, I had mute on.
Hey!
I just noticed my episode that I watched had a different Yoda at the beginning of it.
Really?
Yeah, you want to hear it?
And then I'm going to talk about James Marsters.
Ignore your instincts at your own peril in bed.
That's weird, because usually in the Wikipedia, they'll designate if there's a different one. Because I remember looking, and I'm like, huh, there's no, like, extra behind-the-scenes stuff for this episode, other than that being James Marsters. So that's interesting.
That's the first thing I do, is I freeze frame it so I can write it down.
I wonder why it is. Where do you watch yours? Because I watched mine on Netflix.
I'm watching mine from I'm getting them from all the same source. And they have... They're not from DVD because they have Cartoon Network.
So they're kind of like have little markers. Maybe if Hondo the Pirate was watching them.
You'll have a little Cartoon Network in the bottom with a little animated thing going. So it's taped off a TV. So it's and once before, one of the earlier episodes that I watched had a scene in it that you said was cut out for the DVD, and I'm like, oh, I saw that scene in the
I remember that
in the show. So I'm watching the TV cuts of it, whatever was aired on TV.
Cool.
At least for now.
That's interesting. I did not realize that it had a different ending. Usually Wikipedia, come on Wikipedia,
get on your game.
Yeah, Wookiees. It is being ran by Wookiees. Sorry. But I was very excited to have James Marsters voicing Argaius in this.
Argaius is an interestingly designed character.
Yeah,
interesting
but I
designed
have to say,
hair.
I have a James Marsters story.
The character looks almost like a Catholic, like a knight from, you know, The Search for the Holy Grail or something.
I'm so glad you didn't say schoolboy.
No, it is sort of schoolboy, but it's almost like. He's almost got
an Aryan look to
it's
him.
It's an Aryan Joan of Arc-y sort of look, almost.
Yeah. Ooh.
But he looks like somebody who was, you know, fighting a Catholic for the Catholic Church in the Dark Ages, you know.
Yeah, like in all the paintings and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He should have like a little halo behind his head. But the thing about him is he looks angelic, but at the same time. Everything,
almost like if he was Lucifer, like those right. Classic paintings.
Yes, and then I was gonna say he's almost got devil horns, but Lucifer is a better description because, like Lucifer, the angel Lucifer, you know, then he's got a little spikiness to him. So it's a good design because when you're looking at his character and trying to size up if he's a good guy or a bad guy, or you know, there's something sketchy about him at the you know all the way through it.
I will say that in an interview, James Marsters like purposely made his voice stuffy because he wanted him to come off as arrogant.
Yes, yeah, he came off as a jerk, you know, and and I was trying to figure out like, okay, is this guy, you know, I mean, I'm assuming that any Jedi could probably kick this guy's ass, you know.
Yeah.
And so why would he be so arrogant? But coupled with the Aryan look of him too, and that arrogance, it makes him, it adds a little more layer of insufferability to him.
Yeah, I just really like James Marsters. He's a really big sweetheart.
My notes just wing-haired Jedi.
Wing-haired. So you want to hear my James Marsters story?
Sure.
Okay, so I met him once, and he was at Dragon Con, and before my friend Whitney was really excited about meeting him, but. She's in a wheelchair and like she couldn't get like the right kind of like wheelchair that you needed for Dragon Con, so she wasn't able to go because she wouldn't be able to like move around and stuff like that. And so I went to, and she was crushed. She's a huge Buffy fan, huge Torchwood fan, really wanted to meet James Marsters. So I went to his table and I explained the situation and I was like, no, she really wouldn't be here. And I had made a sign that said, hi, Whitney. And I was like, I just want to know how much it would be to take a picture of you holding the sign so I could take it back to her and get it developed for her. And he was like, oh, that's not going to cost you anything, honey. And like, he like took a picture and then he signed the sign for her. And it was really sweet. He's a big sweetie face.
Nice.
Arthur, you're a sweetie pie with sprinkles. And he's really handsome in person.
Well, he's a prick in this episode.
He's a prick in this episode, but he is a really handsome man, really sexy in person, and I lick his neck.
He didn't try to pick you up like Boba Fett?
No.
Oh.
No, I think he's married. I'm pretty sure that Boba Fett was so drunk from the night before. Okay, so I have a ton of notes. What did you think about this first part?
I like we get another illustration of Ahsoka learning some Anakin style
she lost her temper on Gun Rei.
I wasn't absolutely sure until she got yelled at whether she lost her temper or they were just playing good Jedi, bad Jedi, you know?
Yeah.
It was a perfect good Jedi, bad... Ahsoka, leave him alone. You can't do that. But the thing is, like the stuff she's learning from Anakin, especially early on in this, it works out for her.
She got yelled at, but it worked. Because... like, Ahsoka has a very, like, different acting voice. Like, Ashley Eckstein, like, when Ahsoka's mad, she's mad. But, like, whenever Ahsoka tries to act, it sounds very dry and very stilted. Like, you know, there's times where she's like, unhand me, heathen, or something.
Yes.
And that's what it sounded like when she was yelling. She was like, I'm tired of all this. I want answers now. So I wasn't sure if she was acting either or if that was just...
That's how bad cops act.
Maybe Miss Ashley was like off her game that day or something, because she didn't sound like she was truly mad.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter with someone like Newt Gunray because he's, a simpering coward. So
he's
gonna fall for it, you know. we had a decapitation in this one. That's pretty.
That's not until the next part.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah, it's Act Two.
Sorry, I somehow had it in Act One. Are the boarding ships in this one?
I had that at the beginning of Act 2.
Okay, so those are my only notes. Good Jedi, bad Jedi, and wing-haired Jedi.
That's okay. I have plenty of notes for this section.
Hope's got 8 pages of notes here, so...
Here we go. I will say, speaking of Gun Rei, I really like how he was like, I got money. It's good money. And Greer was just like, ha, ha, ha. No. What? But it actually reminded me of this post I read way back on Tumblr. And it was like this Tumblr blog where like fans could submit like their like personal fan theories about stuff about Clone Wars. And it was this fan idea and amusing about how it was the idea that when a clone gets a gift, they really cherish it because they only really can get things that they can carry on themselves, because it's not like they have, like, rooms to go home to and stuff like that.
Yeah, they've got a footlocker that's mostly filled with stuff they need.
And then also the idea that, like, you know, people don't really see them as anything but clones, so they probably don't get gifts a lot. And also this idea that clones probably re-gift a lot of things to each other, because their buddy dies probably really fast, so they'll take that and give it to another clone. And they'll pass these gifts on as a way to remember their fallen brothers in battle. And it was just like, so I could see how Greer would be like not interested in money. But if Gun Rei was like, you know, I picked this thing off a clone, like that would probably pique Greer's interest more.
You know, what's really strange is Marster's voice reminded me a lot of the actor who plays Obi-Wan Kenobi.
James Arnold Taylor?
Yes, yeah. It was at first I thought it was James Arnold Taylor.
I could see that. They both kind of have that kind of ha ha ha. I was wondering like why I love Ahsoka, and like don't get me wrong, because Ahsoka is one of my favorite characters. I was wondering why she was with Luminara in the first place. It's never explained. And I was wondering why Luminara's Padawan Bera so free wasn't there. And I know they probably don't want to introduce Bera this early on because she doesn't make her appear. She doesn't arrive until season 2. So it could be that Luminara just doesn't have Barriss yet as her Padawan. So that could be an explanation. But I was wondering why Ahsoka was with Luminara in the first place.
Well, you know, I don't know what the details of Jedi scheduling are. You know, it might just be like, you know, we had Ahsoka or there's some Jedi who is like, yeah, I think, you know, the combination of this person and this person would be perfect for this. You know, who knows how they're deciding it, or if it's just a... Or if it's like, you know, the schedule at work where it's like, this Padawan's got off this week. All right, we're sending you on this. We got these two. We'll put them on this mission, you know.
The only thing I could think of is like, you know, this still was very early on in the Clone Wars. And I could see Anakin being like, I'm going off to an incredibly dangerous battle. I don't need to worry about you. But I want you to still go get some experience with another Jedi. So he sends her with Luminara. Like on this, what was supposed to be an easy mission, which I love when Ahsoka was like, oh, this is boring. And then, like, they get attacked. because I love that trope in TV where it's like, never say that something is easy or boring because then something terrible is going to happen.
Something terrible has got to happen because you don't want it to be boring on TV. It's like,
that's why you should always give somebody on TV two jobs, because if someone only has one job, it's not going to get done. So always give someone on TV two jobs.
It would be also funny to just to mess with people, to have a show that starts out with somebody on a mission and just like, this is too boring, I'm bored. And then just have the rest of the show like them sorting their socks and organizing their room and then it's over. Yeah, it was boring.
Yeah,
you wait
like,
for everything.
Like, complex, like look into like a person's like psyche.
Yeah, not even that. You know, maybe they play video games and you just watch over their shoulder for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something. No, make it actually boring and be like.
But you know, there'd be some like critic out there to be like, "This is a dark intake about the spiraling of this human's life."
Brilliant.
It's beautiful with touches of like Western European nods or something.
Exploded all my expectations. Each sock that got folded was another glorious blow for great cinema.
Yeah. And then the final note I have for this section, Cloak of Darkness is one of my favorite episodes because it's really the tale of three very different women who handle a situation in very different ways. Ahsoka is very rash and impatient. Luminara is very composed and she takes her time with things. And Ventress is violent and volatile. And I like seeing over the course of this episode how these three very different women and what causes them and how they act causes them to either succeed or fail. And that's something I really love about this episode, is it has three very different types of women in a very prominent role handling this one situation in completely different ways. And I will have more on that later.
More to come.
Yes, I bring that back in season 3 because I want to build on this note. So, Act 2, so you can talk about your decapitations and your boarding ships.
The guy stuff, come on.
The boy stuff. Ew, boobies.
Someone's going to get their head chopped off.
I want to see that so I don't get all the cooties from the girls. The enemy crashes boarding ships into the Tranquility, there you go, as super battle droids face off against the Green Company of clone troopers. Luminara chooses Gree to go with her, ordering Ahsoka to guard Gunray with Captain Argaius. In the chaos of the battle, Ventress sneaks onto the cruiser, taking a clone's communication wristband to hear where everyone is on the ship. She slinks into the vents unnoticed, heading to the engine room to plant bombs around the area. Luminara and Gree take out the last of the super battle droids, but she senses that it's not the end of their troubles. Argaius tells Ahsoka that the All Clear has been activated. That is until Ventress cuts her way out of the ceiling and lands in front of him. She engages Ahsoka in a fight as Argaius fights to help the Padawan. Tripping up Ahsoka, Ventress frees Gunray and traps Ahsoka in the holding cell. Luminara rushes into the room. Using the Force, she frees Ahsoka and corners Ventress. One step ahead of them, Ventress's bombs go off in the engine room. She flees into an elevator shaft and slides down on her lightsabers, which is freaking cool.
Yes, it is.
It was so cool.
The lighting of it was just fantastic.
Yeah. The ship's controls are going haywire as the bombs cripple it. Luminara commands for Gree, Ahsoka, and Argaius to stay with Gunray as she goes after Ventress. Ahsoka argues that 2-on-1 are much better odds, but Luminara's word is final. She leaps down the elevator shaft to go after Ventress. All right, talk about your boy stuff.
Someone got their head cut off in this one.
It was actually pretty brutal, I remember that. Yeah. I was just like, "Buh." The only thing that kind of ruined that moment, though, is when the helmet falls, it makes like a very hollow, like, blunk sound, and like there's nothing in it.
Well, I think, yeah, weird.
You can't have like a... The helmet hits the ground and blood just splatters out of the end of it. They know.
Well, that's why lightsabers are good. They cauterize, so there's no.
But even then, it was a very light. I could have dropped this plastic cup. That's what it sounded like.
But when I recall, at the beginning of the show, it shows the rating, and this was PG-5 or something like that, and it said some violence, you know, in it, and I'm like, jeez.
Ooh, I think that's a Canadian rating. You are probably watching a Canadian.
Ooh.
Feed. Ooh, fancy.
I wonder what that was all about. But Those boarding ships are awesome.
Those are awesome.
I love that. That is a great. I don't know if that's something they culled from unused Star Wars design, if they came up with it themselves. It looks like something that if it was an unused design, it was from episode 1 through 3. But what a great idea. Little drills that just like drill into the side of the ship and drop droids in.
There's Perfect. Something similar in season 3. It's during the ARC Trooper episodes when Asajj and Grievous are invading Kamino. But the difference is that they're disguised as giant squids. So they climb up the buildings and then just, like, plant themselves in and pretty much lay eggs. Yeah. But the eggs are, like, super battle droids. So it's something similar, but I like this one because it just, like, literally crashes onto the ship and just bam! Battle droids.
Yep. The ship is just, its total function is to just like bore into the side of another ship. I really like that.
And I like the design of it too, because like, you know, usually if you breach a hull of a ship in space, everything's going to get sucked out of it. But it made it to where it like didn't, I remember thinking about the functionality of like if these things crash into it and they fall off, everyone's getting sucked out, but they didn't.
Now, I can't remember if it was Ahsoka or if it was Luminara. But didn't somebody just ram a lightsaber up that droid's ass in that one scene?
Oh, I think it was Luminara. Like, yeah. It wasn't the ass, it was just through the back, but yeah.
It looked like she kind of, like, put it up the old pooper there. And, like, he sort of goes out, has, like, a round hole. And I had to back it up, and I'm like, did I just see that? And I'm like, that's probably something they just threw in there just because the animators, just because they could. I think she just, like, gave that droid a hot lightsaber enema.
I love your notes compared to mine.
Yeah, my notes are a bit different. Yes.
I have these like long notes about like complex female characters, and you're like, right up the pooper.
Right up the poop shoot. That's a cartoon.
Chris, I love you. You're my favorite. I love you so much,
that's,
man.
That's actually all my notes.
Yay. Well, this is good, because if this was a Rex episode, I'd be like, look how sexy. You can see the sweat gleam on his helmet in this scene. So this is actually a good balance for us. My most shallowest note in this is I think Ahsoka has picked up some sass lessons from Obi-Wan when dealing with Ventress.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She definitely, I was thinking, you know, I probably should have written it down as a note, but I was thinking when I was watching that like, maybe Obi-Wan has been like, yeah, when I fought, here's some hints from when I fought Ventress. If you ever end up in her, you know, if you start in a fight with her.
Obi-Wan was
I didn't mean to start Except jumping into Hope's fan Jedi. Fiction, but.
Said on Jedi Guys and Jedi, they are canon.
But if you end up fighting her, you might want to, you know, get her riled up a little bit because it makes her, you know, less concentrated and less focused on the fight. And she definitely, you know, as soon as they saw each other, it was very much like Obi-Wan. She just started.
Isn't it the hairless harpy?
Yeah, exactly.
I like that scene because I actually, for my other show, Football Trades, I have different openings and it's just like edited together of a bunch of different things. And that's the scene I use in one of my Football Trades openings.
Didn't she call him like Obi-Wan's pet or something like that?
Filthy, obnoxious pet.
Yeah, filthy, obnoxious pet, yes.
Because I've heard that opening several times as I edit my own podcast that I haven't touched in forever, since last year. Oh my God, I'm coming up on 1 year of not having an episode of Football Trades and I need to fix this. Oh!
Get on that.
I know. I love watching Ventress in her element as an assassin because she's toying with the little Treadwell maintenance droid and she's having fun. Like, there's that moment where she like lands behind it and she smiles. Like, she smiles at it and like she jumps off again. And like, that's what I've always loved about Ventress. She's such a wild card, and half the fun of watching Ventress is you actually never know what exactly she's going to do.
Right.
And that's what makes her such an engaging character, because it's like, what is she going to do next?
Well, she's a badass, but at the same time, she's kind of an incompetent, too. She's like
I will say this is probably her best episode thus far, because in all the other episodes, like, she got schooled by Yoda, and, like, she's been beaten in several episodes leading up to this.
Technically,
she wins.
Technically, she didn't win this one, but she's going to get the credit at the end of it.
I think she still won.
I mean, the objective reached, but it wasn't really her that did it. It was well, you know, we're getting into Act Three now, but I mean.
But I disagree. I think it was all her plan. Like, I mean, because even then, like, she's the one that signals Argaius, and then once he's safe, he signals her back, and then she goes and meets them. Like, I feel like it was her entire plan from beginning to end.
I personally thought her plan would have been just to optimally grab Gunray all by herself and do it and say, hey, I got him myself, you know, because. Because basically Dooku tells her, this is your last chance, you know.
Yeah.
You've been failing a lot here, and so we'll see how this turns out, and, you know.
I know we're getting to the third act, but even then, like, she and Argaius seemed pretty cool. It wasn't until Argaius opened his mouth was like, I'll make sure to give you credit. That's when she was just like, huh, no, we're equal. Bam, you're dead, mine. I mean, so... I disagree. I think this was her plan the entire way through, and she had every step planned out. She even had an escape and everything.
I disagree. I think Ventress is like, I think it's almost like a rule of the flunky Siths that
they, the rule of flunky Siths.
Well, there's, I mean, basically you usually have two Siths that are the Sith, you know. You have your Darth Vader level, you know, Palpatine level Sith, and then you have your Dookus and your Darth Mauls and your, you know, just sort of the guys that they use to run that are sort of third tier. They're good. Grievous is another one. You know, there's sort of the pawn Sith.
I just thought of something.
And they all have deadly, you know, they all have a deadly shortcoming that keeps them from being, you know, getting to Darth Vader level.
So I just realized something, and why I just never understood the Sith rule of two. Right now, Dooku's sitting in the Darth Vader role, because Sidious is still there as the other Sith Lord,
right.
Correct?
Right.
Why would you take on an apprentice in the first place? Because of the Sith rule of two, if Ventress would eventually have to kill Dooku or Sidious to take on the next role. Why would you have either A, that role, or B, ever take on an apprentice?
Because they're all scheming, and since there have to be two, there's always a Sith is always looking to kill the one above them so they can take that place, but they're still going to be training somebody who's most likely going to kill them, and that person might be training people on the, you know, they're
like, I can say, like, Dooku's older, so I can understand, like, okay, I'm probably, you know, I'm probably about 10 15 20 years left to me, so I can see, like, them training assassins, so it makes sense. But if Dooku was a much younger guy, I'd be like, why would you take on an assassin, like an apprentice, because you know they're eventually going to come after you,
right?
The only thing I can think of is that Dooku's trying to take out Sidious for Ventress to take his role.
Well, you know, maybe you have Sidious going, look, you have to take out an apprentice. So he takes on somebody who's good, but not as good as him, you know, so that, you know, he knows that Ventress is flawed enough. So if it ever comes down to him versus her, that he'll be able to take her out, or, you know, in theory, that would be their theory. So I always figure you have the main two, and between those two, they're always trying to create some more little flunky Sith around to use as pawns and double pawns and double secret agents and as fall guys and stuff like that. And hopefully they won't get powerful enough to where they reach a threat before some Jedi kills them, but they've been useful for a little while.
That's why I really like the Inquisitors and Rebels, because that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, having, you know, all these people who are there to counter the Jedi, and they're not Sith Lords, but they're kind of like, I don't want to say that the Seventh Sister and the Fifth Brother are apprentices, because they're not, but they are Force sensitive, and they're on the bad guy side, and that makes sense to me. Ventress would make a hell of a Grand Inquisitor. Well, like, she would be a perfect Grand Inquisitor. I just don't understand. I guess I just don't get the rule of two.
I guess if you're in strong with the Force, you don't even have to be a Jedi or a Sith, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't imagine you could. There's probably, you know, but like the Sisters, there's other there's other sects that have.
And I read from a deleted scene from Force Awakens. Maz, Lupita's like the little Lupita's character, yeah, who's like the little lady with the goggles and stuff like that. She was originally supposed to be strong in the Force, but she just never became a Jedi, and they cut that from the movie.
I got that impression from her anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I got an impression that she, you know, she might be able to, like, intuitively tell things about, you know, like, basically what you would call someone who is mildly psychic these days, you know, or who was, like, every once in a while would have a perception of something or something. That's what I sort of pictured her as being. Yeah, I mean, just because there's always, if there's two Sith, though, you have to have some other around, because, you know, hey, what if Darth Vader's ship crashes and Palpatine's there? He's got to have somebody to fill that place.
That did happen in the Vader Down comics, and he killed everyone like a boss.
I have to, yeah, I've got most of those, but I haven't read them yet. I'm going to do a massive.
The end of the Vader Down one shot is probably one of the most badass Vader moments ever.
I actually read the one shot, and
the end when he is like, they're like, we have you surrounded. And he's like, ha, all I see is a bunch of dead men.
You poor fools.
That was such a great. I was like, yeah, Vader, that's so terribly amazing. Oh my God, I love Aphra in the comic. She's such a crazy bitch.
I'm theory I should not like her, and I shouldn't like the evil R2 and 3PO.
I love them.
But they work. Yeah. I mean.
Oh man! If 3PO is a psychopath, that's 000. I love 000. He makes me laugh.
It borders on fan fiction, you know. It borders on, like, but then you think about it, and it's like, you know, it's still stretching it, but it's still like almost a reflection of his Anakin side. It's nice to have a protocol droid and an R2 unit hanging around.
I love 000, especially when he was like, hello, I'm 000. I'm trained in etiquette, and I'm here to torture you today. Like, I love him, but Aphra is a character that I'm not sure if I like her or not. I like her in the context of the story, because she reminds me actually a lot of Ventress, is that she's a complete wild card. But she also reminds me of a fangirl, like a very, like the girl who bit Norman Reedus. Like, that's what she reminds me of.
Yes.
And because she's constantly going up to Vader, and she's like, I know you're going to kill me one day. Let's go on an adventure. And I'm like, girl, you're insane.
Yeah,
girl, you're going to die one day. And like, he keeps saving her, and she's like, thank you, Vader. And he's just like, oh, God. Like, I'm waiting for, like, Vader just to, like, kind of, like, force push her out of the way. Like, don't talk to me.
Yeah, no, she's, I mean, if you want to try to break her down psychologically, she's messed up, you know? She's a psychopath.
She's
definitely amoral, you know, at best.
She just reminds me of a rabid fangirl, like someone who's like in love with the idea of Vader, but she knows absolutely nothing about him. It's like when you have a fangirl that is just like, I love Michael Sacha. Don't get me wrong. I adore that man. He was very inspirational to me. When I was like going through a really shitty hard time, his character in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland really got me through, like, was really inspiring to me to help me pick me up. That being said, I don't, like, you know, stalk him or anything. Like, you know, and I'm not like tracking him down and like seeing his every move. I'm not that kind of fangirl. Aphra is that kind of fangirl.
Yeah.
She'd be the one that, like, for example, like, two fangirls set up, like, took advantage of, like, Tom Hiddleston's niceness, and they were like, hey, we have a friend who is working in, like, the movie business, and she just wants to be shown around. Do you have any places that you would suggest in London for him to see? And he actually went and met with them, and they were crazy rabid fucking fangirls, and they just totally took advantage of him. That's Aphra! Aphra's that really fucking crazy fangirl bites Norman Reedus. Like, I'm waiting for her to, like, lick Vader's helmet.
She would be the total person. She's, like, the obsessive personality that would, like, be all down for, like, a suicide pact or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, God, I don't know if I like her or if I hate her, but she is a very interesting character.
I'm afraid she might become like a beloved character in the comic, and eventually they're going to be like, we have to have some arc where she turns good and sees the evils of her way,
Which there is an arc I saw in previews. It's the February preview, so it's for the April comic. And her and Leia, for some reason, have to team up.
Yeah, and I could see that happening, and I could see them actually working together really well. But I don't know if she's
thinking that's how Vader finds out Leia's his daughter. Because he still doesn't know that. He knows Luke's his son in the comics. He doesn't know that Leia's his daughter.
Well, he doesn't know that till... He doesn't even know that Luke has a sister until Jedi.
Yeah.
When they're fighting in Jedi, and he goes,
I'm just so happy they didn't dig up Padme's body. I was really scared that they were going to do that in the comics. Because he's in Aphra after to investigate Padme's death and to see if she was actually pregnant when she died. And I was like, oh my god, they're literally going to dig up Padme. Like, I was really
Frank
scared.
Frank Miller Daredevil episode or something.
Yeah, I was super... I'm so glad they did not dig up Padme. I did not want to see that corpse. I did not. I was scared. Anyway. Oh, gosh. Well, speaking of female characters, that's actually a good lead-in. I just want to say that there's actually a specific reason of why I love Luminara so much and why she's one of my favorite Jedi. And I love how feminine she is. And she's a very put-together and regal Jedi, but she can, like, kick ass in a skirt and she can take names. And to me, like, I remember being in awe of this episode because of that. And it's so important for a young girl to see that. And Luminara actually kind of reminds me a lot of Rarity in the current My Little Pony series. Because, like, Rarity is a character where she's a fashionista, she's a clothing designer, she loves jewels, she doesn't like getting dirty. But when something, like, when push comes to shove, she can haggle and deal, she can shoot magic and blow shit up, she can kick the crap out of things. And she is really tough. And I love that she's a frou-frou fascinista that can kick the shit out of people. And that's what I love about Luminara. Like, just because you're really feminine doesn't mean you can't stand on your own 2 feet and beat someone up. And I think that's something that's not always explored in television. Like, I love the character of Wendy Corduroy from Gravity Falls, but she's not, like, the most feminine character. So it's very rare to see someone who's, like, really girly and really feminine and really put together and see them turn around and like punch someone in the face. That's like not a common thing in cartoons.
They didn't play it up either. They didn't play it up. That's how she appeared. And she's very composed, but they didn't make her an exaggerated girly personality that goes from girly to kicking ass. She's a composed Jedi. She just happens to look very, you know, it's, whether that's her personality or that's like the traditional way they look, you know, her race looks on her planet or whatever, you know, it's just a thing that's there. They don't really like drive it home. And I like that better. I like when instead of, you know, nailing it home, they just have it just sort of exist for it.
Yeah. And that's
kids are
like
smart
about-
enough to see it and pick it up.
And they do the same thing with, like, Padme and Satine. Like, Ahsoka, she's always, like, I think Ahsoka only was addressed one time in the entire show.
Right.
But, like, Ahsoka's, like, always in pants and shorts and stuff like that. But you see characters like Satine and Padme, and they're always, like, in these, like, elegant dresses and stuff like that. But they are not afraid to, like, well, Satine's a pacifist, so it's not really, she stuns people. But
right.
Padme will take up a gun and a dress and shoot the crap out of something.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's just so important in children's for a young girl to see. And I remember because this was a time of Star Wars up to this point, we really only had Padme and Leia. And that's what ever since Clone Wars, there's been more female characters in the forefront.
Yeah.
Pretty much since Clone Wars.
No, they're working it up like 50-50.
Yeah.
In the cartoon.
Yeah. And Rebels is doing the same thing. And now we have Rey. So like, this was really, I think, the first episode that really hit me that here is an episode that's all females and females are now going to be just as prominent as the boys. And I remember just being really in awe of this episode. And I think that's why it's one of my favorites.
And I think this one's another purposeful. They're just trying another direction. You know, here's one with maybe more appeal for the girls, but it's not a girly episode. It's not pink and, you know, a girly adventure. It's just a Clone Wars adventure where the guys aren't there.
Yeah. And though I would love an episode of Padme taking Ahsoka for to get her nails did and get her Leku did and get a facial.
The women characters in here don't necessarily do anything in a girly or in a female fashion or a feminine fashion. They're fulfilling their jobs and their roles as Jedi and stuff, and mm-hmm. or assassins. They could just as well be a male or you could change the gender of any of the characters.
Yeah, and
have episode play out, and you wouldn't have to change anything. Yeah, I like that too. That's the way to do it. Instead mm-hmm. of pounding it home or making it stand out, you just represent it as here. Oh, here's women. As a matter of fact, these women have been so integrated into the life of Star Wars world that it's just not a factor. Their gender is not the only thing that their gender is a factor in this is the way they look.
Yeah.
Their voices, you know. But, you know, there isn't a time where she's just like, oh, geez, I'm going to break a nail and then like vroom, lightsaber up and then kicks her asses. Nothing like that. It's just characters with motivations.
Mm-hmm. And I promise you this is my last note. But
damn
I have
it, lightsabers
to have
up people's butts.
In the poop hole. All right, this is my last note but because I have to talk about my clone feelings. So I had never noticed before the line where the two clones say that droids never like to be called by their nicknames and when they're referring to 327T. One could really argue that there's a very fine line between clones and droids as someone could possibly refer to both of them as completely disposable characters. And the difference to me is the human element from the clones. Like, droids have personalities, but they're not humans. They're just programmed with personalities. And I feel like this is a very long thread throughout the series because it very much reminds me of the Void arc from Season 5 versus the Umbara arc in Season 4. I remember watching the Void arc in Season 5 with General Gascon or whatever his name is. I really hate that guy. But he goes on a mission with, like, R2-D2 and a bunch of droids. And I really hate that arc. And I couldn't put my finger on exactly why I didn't like General Gascon. But then it hit me a couple episodes in that he really reminded me of General Krell from the Umbara arc. Because if Gascon... If they had replaced the clones with the droids... And Gascon was talking to them, people would have a problem with that because he's referring to humans the way he referred to the droids. And it was the exact same way that Krell talked about the clones and saw them as disposable. So I really like that scene. It's one line, but I feel like it was a very heavy line to set up multiple story arcs for the rest of the series.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a very heavy line, but then when you start thinking about it, yeah. And there is I mean, you could argue all day about droids' personalities and how much of that personality is real and stuff, or are some droids more, you know, some droids appear to have more real personalities than others or stuff. But they're in pretty much the same situation as the clones. Droids might actually be in a better situation than the clones in a lot of ways. Droids, at least on the, you know, on the good side, obviously the battle droids and stuff And actually, in Clone Wars, the battle droids are exhibiting a lot more personality. So they are sort of almost like the flip side of the clones.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you could take R2-D2, wipe his personality, and turn him into a crazy murder bot. And that's just who he is. But you can't do that to a clone. And I think that's like the very fine thing that makes them different.
But the clones probably are a little nicer to droids than other people are.
Yeah, I don't know. So there's a few times where, well, Wolf can't stand C-3PO, which is great. Anyway, so, Act 3. I'm sorry that Act 2 was so long. Ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. Ahsoka struggles with being left behind as her instincts are telling her to go help Master Luminara. Argaius tells her that sometimes being a good soldier is doing what is right, and that's what makes them superior to droids. He encouraged her that everything is under control with Gunray and to go help Luminara. And then, in one of the best fights of Season 1, it's Ventress versus Luminara. Ventress breaks open a steam pipe, injuring Luminara's eye, but that doesn't slow the Jedi Master as she taunts Ventress on her sloppy fighting skills. Ventress kicks Luminara to a lower platform and cuts several massive pipes to rain down on the Jedi. Luminara dodges, but her leg is pinned under one. Ahsoka arrives, throwing Ventress back and cuts Luminara free. She joins the fight to stop the assassin. Ventress, though, presses a signal button to our Gaius, who was working for her the entire time. He guns down his own men and takes Gunray hostage. Dooku is paying him a fortune to help with Gunray's escape. Only Commander Gree stands in his way. He shoots Argaius' blaster from his hands as they fight one-on-one, but Argaius distracts Gree long enough for Gunray to hit the clone with the butt of the blaster to knock him out. Getting the signal they're good to go, Vindress sets off one last bomb to launch herself through the vents to flee, which is an equally cool scene. She hops in an escape pod and meets with the ship Gunray and Argaius have stolen. With the Tranquility still damaged, there's no way for our heroes to follow. When Argaius boasts that he'll make sure to put in a good word for her, Ventress kills the captain on the spot. The Jedi realize that Argaius and Gunray stole a Republic ship. Luminara has already called Kit Fisto to track it, leading into next week's episode. So what did you think about Season 3? Because once again, I have a shit ton of notes.
Luminara is way better at getting Ventress's goat than Obi-Wan or Ahsoka. She really pisses her off.
Yeah, she does.
Especially with the whole fighting style thing, was she really found the, like, Obi-Wan and her are almost like a flirty thing. She and Ahsoka have a name-calling thing, but Luminara just went, like, into her psyche and found what she was feeling the most.
It was I recognize Dooku's fighting style. You're not as good as he is.
Yeah, his fighting, and she was sort of like, yeah, his fighting style, yeah, it's not that good to begin with, and you're a crappy version of that. And shoot, that did not settle well.
Mm. So what did you like? I like that one scene where, like, it was either Luminara or Ahsoka says something, and, like, Ventress literally throws up her arms and just goes, rah!
Yes.
And, like, runs at them with her arms waving in the air. I laughed so hard, probably more than I should have. But what did you think about this last little bit?
Luminara's injured eye looks very realistic.
Yeah,
I saw it and I was like, oh man, it looks like she's got pink eye. It looks pain. It literally looks painful. And the high point to this was the lightsaber fight and her blowing herself up through the shaft.
Yeah.
This
is one of the best fights of the season.
I thought, to me, not that this was a weak section, but it was the least interesting section of the whole thing to me, because it was just where everything was sort of resolving. Mm-hmm. So it was just sort of the action resolving. But
it's
the action was really good.
I have like 7 notes in this section, so I got your back.
Okay. And I had a note as to, you know, Ventress bailing herself out by killing Argaius off, but I know... you do not agree with me on that, as we've already discussed. But that's it for my notes.
Okay, so do you want to start with the ladies or the clone feelings? Actually, I'll start with the shallow note. I really like New Gunray throughout this entire episode. He's such a big worm, and he's just pretty much, like, siding with who doesn't kill him. Because mm-hmm. he has that great line where he's like, Captain Argaius, I always had good feelings about you. And then Argaius dies, and he goes, Assassin, I've always had great feelings about you. And, like, he was trying to make Gree follow him. He's like, I got money. Ahsoka, I got money. I just really like New Gunray in this episode. Because all the other episodes, I think, that has him, he's just kind of there. And he doesn't really do much. But I really like showing him throughout this episode. He's just like, haha, I guess I'll negotiate with you because you threatened my life. Oh, my ride's here. Oh, they were beaten. I guess I'll negotiate. Oh, I'm free. No.
Yep, just craven.
I love Gunray in this episode. I think this was one of his better episodes. Okay, so ladies or clone feelings, choose.
Let's go clones first.
Okay, so I'll start with our guys and then go to clones. So our guys' line about soldiers doing what's right is a very heavy setup for storylines for characters like Rex and Fives. Gree wants Ahsoka to follow orders because a good soldier always follows orders. If you've seen season 6, you know what that means. And to stay because that's his training. That's who he is. That's how he's trained. But this is very counteractive to other characters like Rex, who over the course of the show, we see that he realizes that doing what's right is not always following orders. And that's what we often see with the 501st, because what makes the 501st different is their ability to realize when orders are wrong and then they act correctly. And so I really found that interesting that it was the human that was taking on a role that, say, like Rex or Fives or other characters take later on in the show, but he's a human, not a clone. While Gree is the one that's more of the Cody, the wolf, the Cody type, who's just like, no, I must follow orders. I must do this thing.
Well, I mean, I think it's an obvious, like, strong foreshadowing, even though it's past it, foreshadowing of Order 66 that, you know, or it's not a foreshadowing as much, but it just has resonance to it. You know, the clone must follow orders. Every time I hear something like that, I immediately, my brain goes to the future and goes like, oh, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is going to go into some episodes coming up where clones have to do some actual, like, free will for better or worse.
Yeah. I also love the fight between Argaius and Gree, because Argaius flat out says that a clone like Gree would never understand, like, wanting wealth and power, because they're only servants and slaves to the Republic. And we're going to see in a few episodes
right.
that Argaius sounds exactly like Slick, the clone, like the traitor clone, because he pretty much says the same thing, like, our brothers are slaves to the Republic, like, we're not things. But then I also started thinking, like, this is a human, Argaius is a human, and he's not a clone. And if this is what a human thinks about a clone, who is also supposed to be a human, a clone is also a human, I want to know what the average Joe, like, on Coruscant thinks of the clones. Like, what do people in regular society think about them? Because they just kind of show up at the beginning of Clone Wars, and then they're everywhere on Coruscant. Like, they're the police, they're the guards.
Scary, probably, you know?
They're
all identical clones of each other and trained for battle, and they just show up.
Yeah, and I started thinking, I don't think we ever see that side of Clone Wars of, like, what people actually think of the clones.
Well, the human free williness, I like that. It sounds like the movie. you know.
I just, like, saw Rex jumping out of the water.
Yes.
Yeah!
But, you know, you got Argaius, who's a human character, and he's looking very Aryan and acting all superior. And he's actually, you know, the clones are morally way better than him. You know, they refuse money and, you know, how much of that is programming or whatever. But, you know, in this situation, the human element ends up being the destructive element.
Yeah, but it's also kind of weird at the same time. Like, they're both humans, but could you consider the clones almost kind of different races almost? Or do you see them as, like, a different person like, almost like a different species?
Well, no, because, I mean, I don't know what Fett's... I mean, when you say human, do you mean, like, humanoid or, like, human just as, like, they look like a human?
And that's where it's kind of weird,
right.
Because
I don't know what planet... Well, you know, he's Mandalorian, wasn't he, Jango Fett?
I don't think Fett's Mandalorian. I think he's just... I remember seeing a conversation about that on Twitter the other day. I don't think he's Mandalorian, but I'm going to Wikipedia it right fast.
Well, I mean, what I...
Oh, no, it was a male human from Mandalore. Never mind. From the planet of Concord Dawn.
Let's just say for the ease of everything that, you know, two legs, two arms, head, you know, human anatomy, you're human. So all the clones are humans, but they're the same human. They'd still... They wouldn't be a different race than human or anything. And they would just be...
Do you see them as a different species, then?
No, they would just be this weird... I mean, it would be like the world's greatest set of twins, you know? Or really, I mean, basically, that's what you're looking at.
I just thought of, like, that TLC show, like, Kate plus 8. So it's like, Obi-Wan plus 1,000.
Right. What was that Tom Hanks movie where he kept cloning himself?
Multiplicity or something.
Yeah. Multiplicity. It would be like that, only on steroids. But I mean, they would be like, I mean, obviously there's some nature involved where they've been enhanced and programmed. But I can only imagine that if you can do that with people, there's regular humans just getting enhanced anyway. You know, if they have enough money, they're probably going and getting themselves enhanced like clones. But you're still going to get some nurture going on where if you put...
Because that's what makes, like, Rex different from Fives
right.
or different from Cody
right.
or from Wolf. And, like, they're different Jedi, like, coaxing them in different ways in their different battles.
And makes identical twins have different personalities from each other. You know, they'll have a lot of similarities and a lot of the same traits, but they'll be two distinct personalities. So, you know, I mean, that's sort of how I think of clones. And then there's the creepy aspect of the, you know, being made in a lab and stuff like that. But the end product is still going to be a human that, I mean, they obviously have consciousness and you know, feelings and, you know, morality and stuff. So
I might send this to Dave Filoni /Rebels Recon on Twitter. I probably won't get an answer, but what did the average Joe think about clones showing up? It's not how you spell showing. Showing up on Coruscant.
Jeez, for that matter, who's the average Joe on Coruscant?
I know, right? Or just like, yeah, I guess what got me thinking about this is my friend Anjali is watching Clone Wars for the first time, and she is Indian, and she got to the Innocence of Ryloth episode, and she sent me a tweet, and when it was either Wax or Boil, but one of them called the Twi'leks tailheads, and that was really offensive to her because it actually reminded her of a slur that's often used for Hindi people. And so I was like, huh, so if that's how the clones see the Twi'leks, how do people see the clones? So I was like, that's what got me thinking about this because, and all this, so. What did the average Joe think about clones showing up on Coruscant during the Clone Wars?
Well, it's weird because they might think of them as being inferior, but the clones have authority.
Yeah.
Clones can tell people what to do, too, to some extent. So, yeah, it might, I would have loved, like, you'd have to read, like, the op-ed section of the Coruscant Times or whatever, the Coruscant Courier.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, because the only time I can only think of an example is during Arcan Season 6, where a clone takes a taxi, and he doesn't pay, and the taxi driver was like, you dirty clone, you're all the same. And that was about the only time I could ever think of, like, the average guy, like, reflecting on the clones. So, yeah, anyway, I just started thinking about that. It was very interesting that our guys brought that out. I'm sure there's a much, like, deeper race discussion we could have about our guys looking Aryan and the clones being nice and tan, but I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, nah.
I'm sure that's a smarter discussion than what I am. And finally, I just want to talk about the ladies. Ready?
Go for it.
First and foremost, I love that Luminara has a moment of weakness. And she, because I didn't put this in the recap, but she admits that she should have listened to Ahsoka in the first place about Ventress. Her own experience clouded her judgment, and it nearly got her killed. And Ahsoka, who was younger and less experienced, had more knowledge about Ventress, though, and she was right all along. And it's a very fantastic human moment for Luminara, because we rarely get these moments where the Jedi Masters, outside of Anakin and Obi-Wan, which kind of, like, admit that they were wrong, they rarely have those moments where they're like, yeah, I should listen to you. So I really appreciated that moment, and that they took the time to add in, like, that little bit. It's very short, too, because they get interrupted. But, I mean, I really like that, like, 15-second moment.
That sounds like the name of a novel, the 15-second moment.
15-second moment. It's already... not clones. They're only alive for 15 seconds, and everyone has a different personality.
Yeah, even Obi-Wan still... Obi-Wan is probably the most human-acting Jedi... in the Clone Wars, I think.
I would say Anakin too, but they're Anakin is like a young, like, you know, a teenager, and Obi-Wan's like a 30-year-old. So they're just, they're most human acting, but just different points of their life.
But I mean, just the Jedi and Jedi above Anakin in general just seem rather prickish in this time period, you know, that and
wet blanket Windu.
And right, and Obi-Wan is the most relaxed human of them. He's laid back. He's,
especially when Satine comes into the picture.
And Luminara isn't laid back, but she's just a little just more bluntly, honestly human. She realized that she had to tell, she had to verbalize to Ahsoka, you were right, you know, as part of her Jedi-ness, you know. She had to be like, you know, I was wrong when I was, you know, and she was judging her probably on her when they were interrogating Gunray. Mm-hmm. And so she was just like, you know, I don't want to listen to her and she's impulsive, so I'm going
to
go.
Because up to this point, we've only seen Luminara in, like, hollow transmissions, and so she's only seen really seen Ahsoka, like, at Anakin's side as a Padawan. And a lot of times Ahsoka, like, barks out things in those hollow transmissions, too, and just like, I think we should do this!
Right, so right.
Probably Luminara's idea of her.
Well, that's the thing is, we don't know how much history all these guys have together. Luminara and Ahsoka might have gone to a Jedi retreat together to learn trust skills or something at some point, you know, some corporate retreat.
That's a very good point, because in the Kanan comics, there's a shot where Kanan's walking through the Jedi Temple with his friends, and you see, like, Anakin and R2 walking by in the background. So they probably have had other interactions.
Sure, yeah, you know, we don't know.
Yeah. And finally, to continue what I was saying earlier about this episode being about three very different women choosing to handle things in three very different ways, I like that Ahsoka chooses to disobey orders to go and help Luminara, because it ends up being the correct choice. And while Luminara and Ahsoka are two very different people, neither of them are really wrong. You know, Luminara thought she had it handled. She just didn't. And Ahsoka came and saved it. And it's just different ways of approaching different situations. And I really like seeing these sides of these three very different women. And it leads to Ahsoka saving Luminara's life and growing from the experience.
No, both of nobody them was playing the blame game, man.
Yeah, because, I mean, Ahsoka tried, and she was like, you know, like, I'm sorry I didn't follow orders, and she's like, no, that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, pretty glad you didn't follow orders right now, because I'd be dead otherwise.
I would be decapitated like the clone earlier, or probably having a lightsaber shoved up my pooper.
Yeah.
There you go, Chris. That was for you.
As many times, I guess we could have a drinking game with this episode for a drink every time someone says pooper, pooper.
Pooper! Take a shot. I could have said badge. That's the whole shot.
Ooh, we'll get enough. I'm sure we'll find another show where we can use Vag.
If this was a porn, it'd be a Saj Vag.
Vag Triss. It's funny, it's funny, but it doesn't exactly like slide off the tongue.
Oh my god!
I didn't even mean that. Oh, that's even dirtier. I didn't even mean that.
No, I was thinking something completely different with clones and gangbanging. We did not do this anymore. Anyway, what was your final thoughts on the episode, Chris?
I like this episode. It was, I mean, it wasn't the last episode, but what episode is? It was.
Are you really seriously comparing this to Jar-Jar Binks? Oh my god.
It was a good, solid episode. You're gonna scream again. 7. But a 7 is solid. It's just because there isn't a bonus. You know, there wasn't anything like a big bonus.
So it deserves a C, a 70%.
Well, when you put it that way, I guess I have to get an A, because a C is, it's definitely not a C. We've got to give it a B.
Okay, I'll give you that one. Because I can also see.
So we'll give it 8.
I can also see that it's not, this is pretty much no Legends characters. There's no Anakin, there's no Obi-Wan, there's no R2, there's no. So I can see if someone's just like, oh, it's just kind of new characters-ish.
If I could get you to bump the last one up 1 point, I certainly should be able to bump this one up a point from 7 to 8.
Thank you.
It's only decent. Am I not merciful?
You are merciful. You did. You convinced me that about Jar Jar, so I gotta give you that one. So, for me,
that's gonna be my quote, like on like the episodes.
You're
you
about
convinced
to go to
me about Jar Jar, Hope Mullinax.
You're gonna go to like the Two True Freaks Facebook page right after this and be like, in 7 weeks when we get there, you're gonna hear that I was right about Jar Jar. Just wait for 7 weeks, guys. So, for me, this is one of the episodes I featured when I did a season write-up on What the Fangirl for a certain reason. And as I mentioned, it features women of Star Wars very prominently. And as I said, it was just very recently that we've had these prominent female characters since Clone Wars, other than Leia and Padme. I also like that it sets up more clone storylines for the entire series. And you have amazing fight sequences. I love this episode. This, you know how we were saying a few episodes ago that like that would possibly be an episode if someone just needs an intro to Clone Wars? This is my intro to Clone Wars. I think this has everything that they need to like really appreciate Clone Wars, except for having those legacy characters. So for me, like Cloak of Darkness, I give it an 8.5 out of 10. It's one of my favorites.
I think not having the legacy character, having the legacy characters in it makes it a little stronger, actually.
Yeah. I do too, because it's all like new ground. Which, yeah, with a little bit of Anakin at the end and stuff like that. But I like that it's all just.
Yeah, but it's just.
Stuff. It's fresh.
Yeah.
It's like fresh fish.
I mean, like, walk-ons and, like, holograms don't really count on the episodes as much. That's when you don't have a character in there, you know, you'll just see him as a hologram, or they'll just walk out at the end and be like, hey, good job, and then it's over.
Because remember that in Rookies? Like, you know, we all those scenes where Anakin and Obi-Wan, we really didn't need them.
Right, right.
It was like that, and it slowed down the episode and the pace. So this was all like really new, fresh material, which makes it really interesting.
Right. Yeah. There was absolutely zero reason for either of them to be in that episode.
Yeah.
And I just love this experimental time in Clone Wars, this early time when they're trying something new almost every episode. You don't know who they're going to have on it, and you don't know what's going to be going on. It's great.
Yeah, like next episode's going to be crazy.
And it's going to be completely different than this episode.
Oh, do you remember what next episode is?
No, I don't. I just know.
It's the lair of Grievous, where Kit Fisto and his Padawan infiltrate Grievous's lair.
Oh, yeah. I like this one a lot. This one has some nice production design to it and some lighting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you're going to be excited.
No, I'm excited. Yeah.
So as always, you can, if you leave us a review on iTunes, we'll read it on the show. This is several weeks in advance, so we haven't had any new ones since Aaron and Nice Gene. But if you leave us a review or rate us, it helps people find us. And where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where all the Two True Freaks podcasts live, dozens and dozens of them on every nerd topic. If you're a nerd, you're going to find something here that you like. I just
everything.
Know it. It's just a all little bit of everything, literally.
Everything. All the things.
Yep.
Everything.
All in one pile.
In our Facebook page.
You can come in and jump into a big money vault full of podcasts and roll around like Uncle Scrooge.
I thought you were going to say we're going to jump into a money podcast of nerds. And I was like, that's no. That's not a good line. All the nerds. We also have a great Facebook page where we have a lot of great conversations and we share a lot of fun things and we comment on each other's shows. So make sure you check out our Facebook page too. It's also at Two True Freaks Podcast.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, all you gotta do is go to Google and put in Two True Freaks, and it'll take you to all the Two True Freaks hotspots.
I just did it. It was simple. I didn't do it. It's shake and bake, and I have.
It was so simple, you didn't even have to bother to do it. That's
exactly, because I still have all the tabs pulled up from our last recording.
Exactly. Nice.
Well, you can find us on Twitter, mostly me, because I run our Twitter at JGuysAndJedi. Or our friend Gene runs the Two True Freaks Twitter page, too, and puts out all of our episodes. You can find me personally at Hope Molnax, and I also write for What the Fangirl, so give us a little shout-out over there, too.
Yes.
Yay! Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
You should end this episode with the Beyonce song about girls ruling the world.
The Beyonce song?
Yes, I'll send you a link.
Okay, someday I'll tell my Beyonce story on one of the shows.
You have a Beyonce story? Stop the presses, we're not done.
Yeah.
What's your Beyonce story? I love Beyonce, go.
It's a Beyonce underage drinking story.
Did you have drinks with Beyonce?
No, I did not. I watched this situation. I refused to have any. This was.
Okay, then maybe we shouldn't have to tell the story.
No,
sorry,
it's not
guys.
CD as it's sounding. It's
okay,
it's
go.
It's sounding.
This was
Child Day, and this was when I worked in the catering behind backstage, and it was. And Destiny's Child was playing as part of a like five or six acts, and they'd already played. And they were all, I think, like 16 years old or 17 years. They were too young to drink at that point. And they were in their trailer, and one of my friends, who was about 10 years older than me and really seedy looking, they grabbed him because he looked like he would be the most likely to do it, and said, hey, you know, do you think you could get us like a case of beer? And of course, you know, we were in the catering, we had cases of beer just stocked up in a cooler back there, and he's like, sure, but you know, you got to trade me some tour swag. And he thought he was going to get some t-shirts or stuff, and they ended up giving him Destiny's Child money, which were, you know, basically little promo things, but they were dollar bills with Destiny's Child on them that said bills, bills, bills. And I remember all the rest of us were like, don't do it, man. They're not old enough. You're going to get, you know, you're getting a lot of trouble. He was, which we were right, but he was smarter, whereas he knew he was in the world of backstage at a concert and nobody was going to turn anybody, you know, turn anybody in for, you know, that's actually a, like, very, you know, I mean, most of the time you'd probably be trying to procure someone hookers or cocaine or something. So they just wanted some beers, but... yeah, that's my Destiny's Child.
Did you get to meet them?
So I did not get to meet them, but I saw them walking around all day and hanging around. They were playing video games for a while. There was always a big giant screen TV with several video game consoles set up, and especially with the multi-act shows, and all the artists would just basically sit around and play video games and eat and drink, waiting to go on stage.
That's so cool. Less... you were like in the same like 100-foot area with Beyonce.
Oh yeah, easily.
I love Beyonce. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for listening to Jay Guys and Jedi, and may the Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift and Beyonce be with you.
Bills.
Oh man.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.